listening to the Bathtub Refinishing Podcast. Powered by Bathtub Guys Refinishing. We discuss the refinishing industry, interview owners and operators, and give tips to business owners and entrepreneurs. Now, here's your host, Daniel Montalvo.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back. We are in the new studio, right?
Looking good.
We're looking backdrop. Looking good, feeling good, but mostly just dealing with a million technical difficulties. So we finally got to figure it out, basically.
Yeah, made it work.
Kinda. But yeah, guys, it's been a little while. It's been a little while before since me and you could actually sit down and talk
together. Yeah,
it's so been a long time. I think it's good that we're doing this.
End of the year too, which is good.
End of the year, we got some cool stuff to talk about. One thing I did want to say is that, so for Ruben, is that we recorded the podcast. I got some serious ghosting, and I told him about it already. I might still post the audio.
Yeah.
But it's going to take a lot to edit it, so I'm probably not going to post it until January. This might be the last one of the year unless I do something before, like, New Year's. But it's December 24th recording this, so.
Yeah, good luck.
Mm-hmm. But pretty much we got some stuff to talk about here. I want to first update everyone on what's been going on, because the last podcast I did was with Julian and Jack from Hooked on Refinishing. Mm-hmm. And then Julian from Ultimate Tile, my cousin.
Yeah.
And that was pre all the Boston stuff.
Yeah, the mergers and all that.
And all that stuff. So it was a pretty interesting process from what happened really.
Yeah, how it all started.
So pretty much from the podcast, we had the podcast that we did remotely with Refinish Bath Solutions.
Yeah.
And then from there, we were kind of talking with them about their product. They sent a sample over. I tried it out in my shop, and the stuff was like super, super durable, mm-hmm. low smell, which was like something that we've never really encountered, like a product that has like the best of both worlds with that. And then on top of that, I mean, it looks really good. So, and then I remember I told you about it. You came over, we threw the freaking wrench at it a few times, and we were like,
oh shit,
this shit is actually strong as hell.
Yeah.
And then from there, so we went up to Boston to then actually go to Nashua, New Hampshire, where the product is made.
Yeah.
And long story short, because like, honestly, I don't really care about people knowing. I've kind of already hinted at what it is, right? Mm-hmm. Like, but I guess this is going to be the first time I like talk about it openly with everybody.
Yeah.
Pretty much we have an exclusivity as Bathtub Guys to be the only company that has this product, with the exception of a few that were grandfathered in, which I believe it was just like two or three.
Yeah, like two or three.
But pretty much this product is not going to be available to like the open market. And a lot of those people who have the product already are kind of already in early talks to transition over. To become a Bathtub Guys location to an extent. So that's just kind of what happened. The product internally, we're calling it Tubcast.
Yeah.
And I mean, so far so good. I think for the guys making a big adjustment, I know you guys adjusted first. What do you think was like the most difficult part of like changing from a product that's like the only thing you know to like something that's new and different?
Honestly, probably the logistics of dealing with callbacks is about it. I mean, the technical aspect, the transition for us wasn't too difficult, but our guys are pretty experienced and they followed the directions on how to apply. But then you have the isms of like compatibility with coatings and a surface prep or, you know, coloration, stuff like that, that we didn't know about until we go in there and started implementing it in the field. So, I would say probably that the logistics of it, you know, adjusting a team to the new product and then going through the first set of problems and learning how to deal with them.
Yeah, and so we've been like kind of communicating back and forth. I think this will be useful for anybody who's like pretty much tied to something just because they know it and they're afraid to try something else, even if it isn't obviously this, but like maybe they're switching from Top Coat to Midwest or vice versa. They just like are nervous. If you test it yourself as the most experienced guy and you know that it is better, at the end of the day, I think the learning curve is worth the results that we're going to get down the line.
Yep.
And for us over here, because we do have a lot of guys who are just like, they've been in the industry for like 10 plus years.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like, and that's something that, to be fair, Russell kind of told us up there in RBS, is like the guys who have the most trouble are kind of the guys who are the vets.
Yeah,
like because
they're set in their ways.
Where like because we have the owner operator mindset, I feel like we're a little bit more privy to like, oh, we got to change that, and we kind of understand it more.
Yeah.
But for the guy who's just been a tech for a decade, mm-hmm. It goes against this product in particular. It goes against almost everything you know.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't act the same way.
It's not applied the same way. It doesn't dry the same way. It just doesn't even look the same.
It doesn't. It's
when being applied,
it's kind of odd. So, you know, what my guys were having trouble with, which I think was interesting, like talking to you, your guys had a little bit of an easier time with the adjustment.
Mm-hmm.
My guys, the guys who were less experienced picked it up faster mm-hmm. than the guys with more experience are having the trouble. It's actually kind of funny.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, you always, like, a lot of guys know, like, you always have a couple guys where you're like, you know, they're good, but, like, these are the guys that are, like, I want the big job, right? Yeah. Well, now it's been like the guy who's usually okay is now fixing the stuff for the the seasoned technician.
They just they're exactly like you said. And I think a lot of technicians in particular, they follow set directions on how they were taught, but they don't understand coatings.
Yeah,
and that like you know how to work with different types of coatings, and that's kind of the difference between just your average tech. And then that really, like, true owner-operator, the guy who really gives a shit. And, like, well, he'll understand the application process. He'll understand what these coatings are made of. So when there is a reaction, how to troubleshoot. Because that's what we've been going through. Is like, you know, we'll be over here and I'll call you and you'll call me and you'll say, hey, we had this reaction or we had this or this. And that's the mindset that the techs don't carry. They're just like, it reacted. I don't know why. Don't care why. But you have to, you know. You have to work on understand the coatings to an extent to be able to start troubleshooting what could have caused these issues.
And I do feel like because a lot of them have been doing it for a long time, they're kind of the mindset, like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So, like, they're not taking those extra steps to kind of understand why things are happening, like you said.
It was good for us in the beginning. What I kept telling the guys was, like, there's value in this transition for us, too, you know, the no VOC.
The no VOC is going to be a lot safer for the guys.
Safer for the guys.
Also, you know, reducing callbacks. I mean, look, I'm going to be honest. Me and you have had this conversation before.
Yeah.
And I don't care what people say, but there's, especially in the beginning, when you are figuring it out, kind of.
Yeah.
There's like a little bit of a point there where you're thinking like, are these coatings actually like good at all? Like, like until this is the thing that I think these coatings, I think in 2024 going on to 2025, the stuff that we're using should kind of be like the standard. I don't understand how in 2024 these coatings have to go through such a rigorous process to adhere to something when things like, you know, floor epoxy could just be poured on and stuff like that. I feel like coatings aren't advancing to the level that they're supposed to. And in my opinion, I think it's by design. I think that there's a lot more fly-by-nighters than guys like us who are trying to be like legitimate business people. And some of these manufacturers probably don't mind that the stuff's going to peel off in a year and you're going to pay them to come do it again.
I think it's lack of competition because if no one's being innovative, there's really no need to change what's not broken.
Yeah, because realistically, if something can't take a metal shaving can falling on it before it chips, it's honestly kind of stupid.
Yeah, like you could, well, maybe. I feel like automotive finishes, they're pretty fucking tough.
Well,
like you drive your car outside all the time, and it's not chipping every day when a rock hits it.
Exactly. And at high speeds, you know, yeah. too. Which, like, it's not to say that there's bad coatings. I think it's the so what I'm arguing is that the skill gap to make it great is too much of a skill gap for where the technology should be.
It would be interesting to get a couple manufacturers to explain their R&D process.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like to explain like how do they go about innovating their products and making the 2.0 better? Like what's the thought process on that? Or do they just like, fuck it, we're selling urethane for the rest of our lives.
And so, you know, and I'm talking completely out of my ass. It's just things that I feel like.
Yeah,
I just compared to other industries, I do feel like you said, the R&D and what's going on here is just kind of like lagging behind. Mm-hmm. But also because of the lack, this all goes back to lack of industry awareness too, is like, because awareness is not high in this industry, why would somebody waste time making coatings for this industry that are cutting edge?
Correct. That's another thing. It might not be worth the investment mm-hmm. to them up front because of how much it would cost to implement R&D
yep.
versus do we even got guys that will buy this shit?
Yep.
You know, I mean, we saw Refinish Bath Solutions struggling with that
mm-hmm.
where they had this product,
yep.
but they couldn't get people to transition.
Yeah, and one of the reasons was what you mentioned before is that people get stuck in their ways and they don't want to try something new because it's like it's hard to change that.
It is, and it is difficult. You know, we took the risk.
Yeah,
but I remember having a conversation with Pat
mm-hmm.
saying like, we're gonna find a way to make it work.
Yeah,
someone's got to test the limitations of it, and then we're gonna know what's wrong, and then their part of this whole deal is to listen to our feedback and make the best coding that they possibly can.
Exactly. Which, to Pat's credit, he even mentioned that if, like, pretty much every step of the way, if there's something we don't like, he will adjust it.
Yeah.
Which is, I can't tell you guys how cool it is to work with somebody that is not just listening to your feedback, but like constantly in the lab, like, yeah. tweaking and messing with it to be the best version of itself. One of the things we had that was kind of an issue was the pigmentation and yep. coverage mm-hmm. Because this product originally, the original formula was to be rolled on to pour it on.
Yeah.
And because you're pouring it on, I mean, there's it's more
such
than
a film. Your film build is so much bigger.
So much bigger. And yeah. you would cover up things like a Bondo or something like that. Whereas with this product, this version of it that we're using, because it has to come out of a spray gun, it comes out almost translucent. Mm-hmm. And so we've been having to resin prime everything.
Yeah.
In the meantime.
Which, we, you know, part of our strategy was like, we wanted to develop a system where we could offer customers two types of services. You have a no VOC and a low VOC.
Exactly.
Where we know I don't know the exact specs, but I'm assuming the urethanes were off-putting more
VOCs,
VOCs
oh yeah, for sure.
than the epoxy primer was, just from what we smell in the field, right?
Yeah.
So now we're developing the 2.0, mm-hmm. we're going to have more pigmentation. We can possibly offer that no VOC completely because the roll-on method is pretty efficient.
Yeah, that's something mastered. I want to get into that in a minute. By the way, I did get the higher pigment version, so we can probably cool. tweak with
yeah,
it.
Yeah, we need to mess with it. Check it
yeah,
out.
Yeah, so that should be cool. I want to test it out on something dark colored, preferably.
Yeah,
maybe I'll go see if I could find something.
We could always spray something dark.
Yeah, and then just see how it eats the color.
Yeah.
What I was thinking is those 55-gallon drums I have that are black.
Yeah.
Test it on there.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And then yeah.
Yeah, but oh, and then we also decided on using the resin primer also for contaminant barrier.
Yeah.
Something we were learning dealing with the product is that even through thorough cleaning, etching, sometimes you'll still get reactions.
Yeah. And so I want to give credit to both Midwest and Top Coat. They both make great freaking products.
Yeah.
And regardless of how I feel about their actual finishing, like the Top Coat, and, you know, we've switched to this for different reasons, mm-hmm. but Midwest Primer is among the best resin primers on the market.
Yeah.
And we've been using that mm-hmm. coupled with this new system. But also, we've been testing out with CrossLink.
CrossLink, yep.
And you know, we tried one without it, got a contamination, tried one with the CrossLink and spraying it, and it came out great.
Yeah.
So those products are also, they're kind of helping us to get to that kind of perfect system.
Yeah, I would say our initial reasoning for working with RBS was the adaptability of their product to be able to transition from spray to roll.
Yeah.
In the right circumstances, you know.
Exactly. And to credit, you know, again, credit to Top Coat, they have a roller glaze system that is pretty, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
And a lot of guys, it's still urethane. I believe they have an additive that increases the open time so you can mess with it.
Okay.
And it comes out good. So, like, you know, for some guys out there that, like, you know, they're like, oh, shit, you know, maybe I can't get that product that the bathtub guys are using. There is options out there.
And it's good that there is, like, the set companies that are all operating on that, like, top-tier playing field.
Yep.
Because that will force the other manufacturers to stay up relevant on the R&D and continue creating good products.
One thing I do want to say, though, and I've seen this, like, thing thrown around, like, so this product is an epoxy hybrid of some sort.
Yeah.
One thing I'm going to push back on, like, real quick, because I've had people ask me, like, doesn't epoxy yellow? It's like, man, there are some urethanes that yellow. Like, it depends on how it's made. If you're talking about Stone Coat, the cheapest stuff on the market, like, you know, from you know, what they actually use is not the super highest quality epoxy. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying it's a bad product. We've used it and gotten cool results with it. But there's different levels to this. There's epoxies that are hybrided with, you know, different kinds of urethanes. There's epoxy hybrids that are with waterborne stuff. Like, there's a bunch of different things. Things are always evolutionizing. And realistically, epoxy's been around for a super, super long time. So if you think epoxy is the same as it was in the 1990s, like, that's like saying urethane is the same as it was in the 1990s. There's really bad urethane.
You know,
Rust-Oleum is urethane, and they talk shit about it all the time.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think the bigger issue is with the yellowing, what people got to be concerned with is, the manufacturers, if they really wanted to develop the best shit, coatings that don't flatten.
Yeah.
You know, if you go back to a tub from, it also depends how they clean it and shit, but we all been there. Like, it does flatten out a little bit after it's been used for a couple of years. I'm interested to see how our product is, like, we go visit a job from 5 years ago and see what that shine looks like. Did it flatten out? Did it yellow? You know, these are things that we're going to be on the forefront
of
letting people know, you know, how this product works.
And in all honesty, that still remains to be seen. We have done quite a few jobs over a few months. And again, you know, to RBS's credit, you look at their reviews, most of the negative ones are either user error, like, very clearly. Yeah. Didn't clean thoroughly, they're getting fish eyes everywhere.
Yeah.
Or some sort of other issue that doesn't, like, not pretty much what I'm getting at is I haven't seen anybody say it's yellowing.
Yeah. And I haven't seen any issues that you wouldn't have with a urethane.
Yeah.
So if the issues that we have come across are the same type of issues you would have, you know, reactions or when you're doing it in a pro series like we are in such volume, you know, you're going to run into problems. Yeah. We're knocking out multiple jobs between both locations, you know, a lot of jobs a day. So we're really testing it. And I haven't seen significant differences besides compatibility. That's, you know, like, can this coating go over top of this old finish or can it not? Mm-hmm. You know, those are the things that we're kind of R&Ding right now on the service-based level, then feeding that information back over to Pat.
Who's making adjustments.
Making adjustments to see if he can make it that much better.
Yeah, and that's awesome. That's one of the biggest things about the relationship to us and to Alex that was, like, appealing was that we always have someone who's trying to be on the cutting edge of it. Mm-hmm. And in my opinion, is already there, but he's not just content with, like, all right, this is it, and this is as good as it's going to get. He's, like, always looking for the next thing he can do with it.
Yeah.
And so that's been refreshing to work with. You know, and as far as, like, the product, I think definitely even so far, the benefits have had outweigh the negatives. I have not had one person complain about smell. Yeah. And usually that is like a weekly thing where it's like, oh my God, it smelled horrible.
We're doing a hospital that there cannot be any smell.
Yep.
And we haven't had any complaints.
So that's another thing is that it's opened the doors for us to get into places where guys who spray urethane wouldn't get in.
Yeah.
Because this thing, like, it doesn't, like, it has a smell.
It has a smell, but it's not the same.
The way I describe it is kind of, it smells like wet cardboard. Like, it smells, it doesn't smell like,
you know, what it is, too, I noticed, now that we've been around it a lot, you know that taste you get in your mouth?
Yep.
Because the coating doesn't flash like a urethane,
yep,
the particulates stay wet. Everything stays wet.
Yep.
So I think that if you inhale a little bit, what you're actually doing is, like, it's staying wet in your nose and your mouth.
Could be.
So that's why you get that unique little, like, taste or smell if you go in there without a mask, which nobody should do, but come on, let's be real.
Yeah.
You walk into a bathroom and look real quick, you'll get that little aftertaste. And I think it's because I'm sure nobody knows, but when you apply this coating, it doesn't dry the same way a urethane does.
Yeah, so there's no flash dry with it the same way a urethane is. It will dry in between coats, but granted way slower,
mm-hmm,
and like it'll still be wet.
Yeah.
It's not like tack dry or anything like that. It's still wet. But here's a big benefit of it, guys. Like with urethane, let's say you got to run,
mm-hmm,
and you're kind of screwed, man. Like you can try to flash dry it off and sand it down, but a lot of the times, unless you're using a faster cure time, you're gonna be sitting for a minute. With this coating, if you got to run, you can just pull out a roller and just fix it.
Yeah, it's so forgiving. You get a piece of debris at the bottom of a tub,
pick it out,
roll it in, and it'll self-level. So it has its benefits. Mm-hmm. But you know, the application process, we've gone through issues where we've had to change where even your masking can stay wet.
Yep.
You know, as the overspray settles, you have to be careful where you step when you're walking through a homeowner's house.
Yep.
You know, you don't want to track a track of fucking wet paint around, but these are things that it's been interesting and why people don't transition,
mm-hmm,
because not only are you transitioning to applying the product, but then you have all those isms that you don't think about.
Exactly. It's one of those things where you just got to see if the benefits outweigh the risk. And most of the times they do. Like if you're looking for a different coating, you know that you're probably not doing the best job that you can.
Yeah.
And, but you know, don't let the risk of a few little things going wrong keep you from bettering your business, because it'll cost you more in the long run.
Yeah. I think, and for us, the factor of having direct relationship,
mm-hmm,
with the manufacturer,
yep,
is a business benefit to the max. Because,
yep,
like, it's not just buy our product and now it's on you, figure it out. We have someone in-house to run our real deep issues, or if we have, you know, it'd be nice to be able to go to Top Coat or Midwest and be like, I want this. Can you develop it?
Yeah, but they have so much people who are okay with the way things are.
Yeah.
And that, you know, it's going to take a lot more to make a tweak. And it's not to say that they won't. Like, you know, when the stuff started going really bad with the economy, Midwest made a cheaper glaze that was more economical. Like, and people were asking for that. So, you know, that's cool that they did that. But at the same time, I do feel like it's cool to be one-on-one with someone who has a vested interest in, you know, mm-hmm, seeing your company grow, because part of that came with that is an investment in us expanding.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a longer term thing, but he has a vested interest in Bathtub Guys doing well. And because we transitioned our main product over to him, you know, like that's what we're using exclusively for the most part.
Yep.
You know, now we have a vested interest in making sure Pat is making a good product.
Yeah. Everybody's all on the same page right now, mm-hmm, from product manufacturing to who the product is sold to, the now who's applying it, mm-hmm, and it all goes full circle.
Yep. I've been happy with the results so far, and you know, even though we've ran into a few hiccups, one thing I can say is that the ease of application once you get it is like actually crazy.
Yeah.
So like, you know, you close up the gun, you have so much more control, mm-hmm, because even though you're closing the gun up, you're shooting more material, because you're not losing the coating in the air. Like when you flash, like when a material is atomizing in the air out of the gun.
Yeah.
So you're putting a good amount of material on there, even though you have the fluid kind of tight.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, the durability is actually crazy. Yeah. Fact of the matter is, I have not seen any of the jobs we've done chip, like, on some, like, I drop something.
Yeah, nothing like delicate. It's not so delicate is what it is. And it's that big film build because you don't have to, you can over-apply in the sense of, like, you know, most of the guys, you know, when you're working with the urethane, if you apply too heavy too quickly, you'll get solvent pop.
Yep.
You can risk the cracking down the line. With this stuff, it's just like, it's like you're adding glue on top of glue.
Mm-hmm.
And if then by the end of it, if you really are patient and you put a big build on there, you're going to have a fucking layer of paint this thick that you're going to have to break through. And then the paint itself is practically a glue. It's an adhesive. So it has a crazy bond.
Yep.
So getting it off is not easy.
Yep.
You know, it's been fun to work with.
Yep. And one of the cool things too is that if it's still wet, it does wipe off with water, which is actually cool. I've seen that on job sites.
Actually, at the hotel. We did that the other day. Little Angel had a job where we tried to do a roll on over top of a urethane finish to test it, and it rejected it.
Mm-hmm.
Just took some acetone and a paper towel,
just
cleaned the whole thing off and started scratch.
Yep.
And I was like, holy shit, that's badass.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, like that saved us from having to, because, you know, if it was a urethane, it would have started flashing over and then you would have smudged it and it would have been all fucked up.
Yep.
This was like, all right, we fucked up, reset, wiped it all off, and then started from scratch again.
Yeah.
It's cool.
And so rolling it on has been also pretty cool. We actually have a guy coming down to show us how he does it. He's one of the legacy guys that I mentioned before.
Yeah.
Who kind of was grandfathered into the product. Really cool guy. What he's done is play with the product to the point where he can get it to roll on and look like it was sprayed.
Yeah.
And the last video that they sent me, I was impressed. So Pat was like, I'm going to send him over there and show you guys how to do this. And I think if we can crack that code, it's going to be really beneficial. One of the things about the roll-on that is really cool, I think, is not only are you saving material cost, and obviously once you perfect it, time, but it's like what you mentioned before is how forgiving it is if you see a sag or a run.
Yeah.
Just going in there with a roller and kind of moving the material around and letting it level back off. Mm-hmm. Those are things where, like, with a urethane system, you usually have to wait the next day.
Yeah.
And so it just, it's going to make the technician's life, I feel like, even easier
in the long haul. That, and it also blends really well.
Mm-hmm.
So the sheen on it, from what I noticed, you know how when you can't really do a spot repair without doing all these extra steps to get it to blend correctly. This stuff, like, once it dries and it self-levels, it just blends right in. So we had a run on a wall,
mm-hmm.
a tile wall, and it was like 3 or 4 tiles across. And I just sanded those tiles down, rolled it. It was sprayed on.
Mm-hmm.
We rolled it on top of the run, you know, after we sanded it down. And once you took the masking, you literally cannot tell. A repair that would have took, you know, an hour and a half to bring all your shit in, get prepped off, spray, clean up, get out, took 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Came in with a fucking roller and a tray and just.
That is awesome.
Yeah. So that was like one of the first service calls that we faced when I called you, and I was like, dude, this shit is crazy. Yeah.
It's crazy. It honestly, it's just, it's crazy. It's crazy to see like where, like, you know, some of these products have gotten, like, and so it was originally a European coating. So I don't know if they're all like that over there or what's going on, but
I have no idea. This one's pretty good.
But that is pretty good. And what we've seen so far, I like it. A lot of people saw, I got a lot of DMs when I put the video of me throwing the freaking wrench at it. And that tub in particular, a lot of people don't know is that tub in particular was not primed. Mm-hmm. It was cleaned with alcohol. And then I put a tape line and then we just sprayed 2 coats on there.
Yeah.
Like Pat did that in 20 minutes. At my shop, just like, here, I'm going to show you how it works.
Yeah.
And then the next day out, he was telling me it was the most durable coating. I was like, all right, well, let me test it out. So at first, before I started recording, I'm like dropping the wrench from medium height. Mm-hmm. And I'm seeing that there's nothing. I was like, okay, well, you know, even from medium height at the right angle, urethane won't chip either. So I was like, let me throw it. Like,
yeah.
And just bounced off the fucking thing.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And I was just like, wow.
Yeah.
And then so I pulled the camera out. I was like, I'm hoping that it doesn't chip in the video.
Yeah.
But I'm throwing it in the video like 4 times. After I recorded, I kept throwing it at the bottom to see what it would take to chip it. It freaking takes like a man fucking bang to hit that.
I mean,
that
you
thing.
Saw what happened when we were in Boston.
Oh, yeah.
And we were hitting the shit out. Eventually, just broke the tub.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that's, so yeah, and I'm going to wrap up this little segment on that, but, and then we'll do another one because I'm trying to keep them around 30 minutes doing that thing again because some of the last ones have been really long. But up in Boston, there was a monkey wrench like this big, and the tub was porcelain.
I think it was Danny who brought who.
So Danny Garcia from Alliance Bath was there, and he brought me this freaking giant monkey wrench. I dropped it on the tub. I thought it chipped it, but it was like a scuff of the red paint from the monkey wrench got on it. We cleaned it off, and I was like, "There's no way."
Yeah.
But then my brother decided to grab the thing and bang it, and it cracked. So we're like, holy shit, well, you know, it broke it. But then when we actually pulled the freaking material off of the tub, the actual porcelain underneath all of the material was what shattered, and it broke. The surface tension broke the paint off.
Exactly, yeah.
It was actually insane.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, man, this stuff is pretty cool. We're going to be, you know, updating you guys on how it is. And, mm-hmm. and as we expand too, you know, we are planning to add people to, you know, the podcast who maybe are interested in coming aboard with Bathtub Guys and sharing their experience with the product and kind of this. What I really want to do with this, and I'm excited about this aspect of it. This is part of the reason we got the office or the new office here and the new studio is that I kind of want to, like, document this building of a little empire, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I have faith that it's gonna work. I think we have a solid freaking team, man. I think what we're doing in Tampa, which we'll talk a little bit more on in the next one, I think is gonna be really interesting to see, like, those the step up to building a real competitor to, like, a Miracle Method.
Yeah.
And we're gonna be documenting it.
Yeah.
And that, I feel like, is going to be really cool to look back on as a company, as individuals. Like, look at all the stuff that happened to when we reached the freaking top of the mountain, right?
Yeah.
So that's why we're doing this. That's why we're talking about it. And some of the stuff we're posting, like, it's like, in a way, just like those backs documentaries where, like, we're just, you know,
it's a story, man.
It's a story. It's the come up story. We wanna document that for everybody and for us too. So I think it's gonna be cool.
Yeah, it's gonna be cool. When back on.
But yeah, man, I'm excited. I'm also excited to be back on the podcast, man. So I'm gonna end this one here. We're gonna go ahead and come back and we'll add in a little part two for this and talk about some more businessy stuff.
Sweet.
All right, guys.
You've been listening to the Bathtub Refinishing Podcast. If you liked what you heard, be sure to keep up with the Bathtub Guys on YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram, or visit bathtubguys.com for more. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.